Welcome to the Best of Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you'd like to talk to someone about your legal questions, you can call Joe's office at 727-586-3306, online at attypip.com. Email Joe at attypip.com.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Hey, it's open on Saturday mornings just for you to call in and ask the legal question. Hopefully you'll get some information that'll be helpful to you. And also, there are other people listening, of course. We're on about 12 stations around Florida now, all over the state of Florida, and people are listening that might have similar circumstances, not even realizing they might even have a problem or a situation they could do better with. If you have a legal question, it can be just about any area of the law. Can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates, living wills. Can be personal injury, next door neighbor problems. Can be on the job problems. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-226-3529. If you have a legal question, be more than glad to try to help you, get you pointed in the right direction. Let's go to Doug in Jacksonville.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Actually listened to you beginning about 5 years ago in the midst of caregiving my 103 and 101-year-old grandparents, and they subsequently passed. And we had made, 8 years ago, we had made a will and an enhanced life estate deed. And for whatever reasons, well, actually, I have some documentation from Wells Fargo. They say that they reviewed the enhanced life estate deed, the joint mutual last will and testament, and they don't provide full authorization to receive information and make changes. So,
to Wells Fargo? You're talking about Wells Fargo said they would not assist you?
Basically, yes. After the passing, they passed about 6 months apart. I went there. They still have about a $30,000 mortgage on the house. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that was their home office sent that.
All right, so you have a ladybird or life estate type of deed where you are the remainder?
Yes, yes, remainder man.
Okay, now you show them the death certificate and the deed.
Yes.
And they don't acknowledge you as the owner now.
Again, it says we reviewed the enhanced life estate deed, joint and mutual last will and testament, and they don't provide full authorization to receive information and make changes. We've listed you as a title holder or an interested party who can receive certain limited account information, including amount of the monthly payment and due date.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. They have other accounts?
Who's they?
Well, the deceased, do they have anything that would require probate?
Well, they have the mortgage payment is taken out on the 19th of the month, excuse me, automatically from their checking account, which I've maintained. I have about a 3-month reserve there.
And are you the beneficiary on the checking account?
I'm on the checking account. Yes.
Okay.
I took them the death certificates, they removed both of them and kept me on the account.
All right. There's nothing that needs to go through probate.
Good. I thought so.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're the owner of the property, and you're already on the financial account.
Well, I guess that's my question, because further in the letter it says, going forward, what are my next steps? The level of access you'll have will be based on the documentation you provide. And, I provided them the documentation. I provided them a copy of the joint and mutual last will and testament and the enhanced life estate deed.
Okay.
There's no other.
All right. Well, showing them the will doesn't really mean anything.
Uh-huh.
Because the only time you would need to take further action yourself if there was an asset in the name of the deceased person. So now because you're on the checking account and you're the remainder man on the life estate deed, you technically own all of those assets yourself and you don't need help from the probate court. And since you know the monthly amount of the mortgage and the payoff date, you continue making the mortgage payments, and when it's paid off, you are on the public records, the owner. They'll give a satisfaction of mortgage. So I don't know what else you could be asking them that you would need at this point.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
I don't know what else you could be asking them for that you really need.
Yes. So do you... Well, I guess that's my question, which way to proceed here. I just want to make sure that everything is in order. So when the time comes, the house is being rented out right now.
Yeah. Well, you're the owner. See, when a person has... You are the owner. So when a person has a ladybird deed, or life-enhanced deed, as you called it, and the two people that passed away have died, you file their death certificate, so the court... It's going to recognize you as the owner, which it seems like they already have.
Uh-huh.
So since you're the owner, you can rent it out.
Okay. Well, when you say the court has recognized me, there have been no court. You're talking about...
Well, the deed. The deed was filed. The life-enhanced ladybird deed was filed. You filed the death certificates. As far as the court records show, the clerk of the court is going to acknowledge you as the owner of the property because the type of deed and the death certificate is being filed.
Well, when you say I filed the death certificates, what do you mean by that? I mean, I just took them to Wells Fargo. No,
okay. Well, if you file the death certificates with the court, take them down to the local courthouse, file death certificates, then you will, on the court records, be the owner of the property.
Okay. So just go to the clerk of the court here in Jacksonville?
Yes, and file the death certificates.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the show and your service to the community.
My pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. Let's go to Zoom.
Yes, good morning.
Hey, how are you? How do you pronounce your name? I want to hear you say it.
Oh, my first name is Zoom.
Zoom, okay.
Y-Z, like zebra, U-N-G.
All right.
Zoom, yes.
All right. You might be the first time I've talked to someone with that name.
Right. I'm Asian American.
Okay. What can we do for you?
I have questions. I have a stock certificate, and I have designated a TOD to my sibling. Mm-hmm. And should I put it in the living revocable trust?
All right. Well, you have a choice. You can leave it like you have it, or you can put it in a trust. The benefit for putting it in a trust would be that if you have a stroke, incapacity, some illness where you can't function very well yourself, making financial decisions and so forth, if it's in a trust, the successor trustee now can use it for your benefit and a lifestyle to your custom while you're living. And a POD means they can't get to the asset until death. So the advantage of a trust is that it can be used for your benefit by the successor trustee while you're living. And you have other assets that you can't probably put POD on, like your home, for example. Your home would be better suited in a trust than like a ladybird deed, because your trustee would have the power to deal with a home for your benefit while you're living, not having to wait for anything to happen until your death. Does that make sense to you?
Then I will put it in the living revocable trust.
Yeah, do you already have a trust?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, yeah. So, yeah, if it were me, I would put it in the trust rather than have it paid on death for sure.
I see. Thank you.
All right.
And, you know, I also have a certificate of deposit, and I already, you know, designated beneficiary, you know, like...
It would be the same thing on that, though, too.
Or in trust for, you know, with certain banks, and when I pass...
Yeah, it would be better.
My beneficiary will, you know... Receive.
It would be better in a trust if you're going to create a trust, though.
Oh, have to be in a trust?
It should be. It doesn't have to be, but I'm saying if you're going to create a trust, it'd be better to put that in the trust as well.
I see. Thank you. Even I already designated beneficiary.
I know. I know. It's the same way as your stock certificate. This is the same exact answer. It'd be better for in a trust so it could be used for your benefit while you're living.
I see. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Mark calling from Citrus County. Hey, Mark.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, and I appreciate the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. What station are you listening to?
The
107.5, I believe.
All right, that's a classic rock station during the week?
Yeah, I think so.
All
yeah.
Right. Well, very good.
Appearance, Citrus County.
Yes, sir.
I've got a general question. I don't know if it's above your pay grade or not, but we'll see. It's in relation to the medicinal marijuana law in Florida and constitutional right to bear arms. And my question is, for a concealed carry permit holder and a medicinal marijuana user, because I understand you have to register for the medicinal marijuana, and you're already enrolled as a concealed carry permit holder, and in order to possess and operate firearms underneath, I believe, federal law, you have to fill out the firearms background check information saying you don't use marijuana and things of that nature. So my question is, in the state of Florida, there's permits or licensure for both of those things, and they seem to me to be in conflict. So can the state cross-reference these lists and use it to deny rights or force the individual to pick or choose which rights that they want to adhere to, or can they do that? And I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
All right, well, no, don't hang up quite yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Let me tell you, I think the state could do that. But whether it be challenged on the federal level, I would doubt, because on the federal level, they have more laws against marijuana than they are the state laws.
Right.
But I think the state could take a step to try to do what you've just suggested, to, you know, to make them choose one or the other.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I'd probably go all the way to Supreme Court. It would be a very interesting case, I think.
Yeah, because because the argument that's always, I'm not either of those things. I do, you know, possess firearms, including handguns, but I'm not a concealed carry permit holder, and nor am I a medicinal marijuana user, although I did vote for that amendment when it passed. But my question is, and this is what I commonly get, is concealed carry, and this is what the state of Florida, or when you go for that, they say, well, this list cannot be used to keep track of firearms or be used for confiscation. But I guess you and I both know that lists are compiled for reasons. So.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. But I don't, you know, I'm not going to have an exact answer for you, but I think the state could try to do that. And the state seems to be burdening the whole process down with lots of regulations, and it really hasn't kicked off as fast as we people thought it would be anyway. And
right. This
would be another great consideration, I think, to consider. And I'm not sure, I haven't really thought about what I think the answer should be, what the correct answer would be. Because you don't want people with weapons, concealed weapons, to be smoking marijuana, even for health purposes, but they have the right. They could easily argue. I could see the argument where they have the right to do both.
And as a concealed carry person, you're not supposed to carry in places where alcohol is served.
Right.
So there's already a little precedent there for, I guess you would say, mind altering substances or things of that nature to guard against that. But anyway, interesting. I just started running. So they do have a precedent. They could decide to do that in theory.
I think that the state could definitely try to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Appreciate your time.
Maybe we'll get Pam Bondi on the show and see what she thinks about that.
I guess it is up to the Attorney General, and that makes that vote all the more interesting when you go to cast it, too. So.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks for calling.
Not a problem. Thank you, sir. Bye.
All right. Let's go to Alden, calling from Jacksonville. I assume you're listening to WBOB 600 The Answer.
Correct.
So we've had my first four callers have all called from different stations. That's pretty cool this morning.
That's amazing. Anyway, I've listened to you before from time to time, and I appreciate your advice. You seem to be very calm and very reasoned in your advice.
Well, thank you.
But I have a quick question. I had established a trust on behalf of my mother in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And she passed away, and I was the trustee. She was the beneficiary. She passed away, and then I wondered, I had established a small checking account and a federal employer identification number. Can I keep that trust and amend it so that I could be the beneficiary and somebody else could be the trustee, and that would give me the advantage of not having to open a new bank account and establish a FEAM number? Is that possible?
No, I don't think that would be advisable because, first of all, make yourself the beneficiary. The trust already had a named beneficiary. Was that you?
No, it was. I was a contingent beneficiary, but if I remember correctly, this has been about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But what prompted my questions, my brother was also involved in it as a contingent trustee, and he passed away recently. So I didn't know if I wanted it. Can I keep the same checking account?
No, no, because that has, see, what you should do is to create your own trust and use your own Social Security number.
Right.
Because you and the trust are the same entity. So that other trust should be dissolved and the assets distributed to the proper beneficiaries.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you for the advice. And
all right, well, my pleasure. And just to let you know, we do have offices in Jacksonville if you ever need anything.
Okay. I have someplace. I have a flyer. I don't remember when I came by it, but I have one of your flyers. So
we offer to give those away on the show, so maybe we mailed you one.
Thank you so much.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
By the way, our toll-free office number, and by the way, if you want to get our free estate planning poster sheet, now these are the sheets we hand out at the seminars I speak at, or other speaking engagements as well. But if you would like one, it has the three options in estate planning, has an article about the difference between wills and trusts, has a little trust diagram, has all about estate planning, has a cost of probate article for you to look at all that so you understand that. And that's on one side of the big poster sheet, five articles. On the other side are all our office locations, our 20 office locations all around Florida, with the local phone numbers for those offices, all of our attorneys, something, information about the radio shows and so forth. If you like this free estate planning poster sheet, I would love to get it in your hands. We mail it to you. You could download it on your computer, but it's a large sheet. And you usually can't get it all on one page, and it's a double-sided sheet as well. We'd love to mail it to you. It's much better in your hands if we mail it to you. So you can get it one of three ways. You can get it by calling our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. You can email me a request. I need your name and address at Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y, those abbreviations for attorney, A-T-T-Y-P-I-P, those are P's like Paul, .com. Or you can text me your name and address, 727-667-3967. Let's go to Nancy in St. Petersburg.
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
Good. What station are you listening to? Because we're going to be on a roll here. You're going to be the fifth different station here on five calls.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. You've been on my radio for so long, I'm not sure. It's my local Christian station.
Yeah, 570. Okay.
Okay, there you go. That's
very
it.
Good. All right. Very good.
I'm calling because I have a question regarding the fact that I'm going to be getting married. And I own a home, which, I have no problem putting the home in my husband's name. But I have life insurance policies that I bought previous, and I have two adult children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like them to be able to remain the beneficiaries of those accounts. Is there anything special that I need to do?
My suggestion to you would be to get a premarital agreement. It can be a fairly simple premarital agreement, but basically it's going to be able to establish. Now, before I say that, let me ask you this. Does your husband have substantially more assets than you, or do you have more?
No, I would say I have more than he does.
Okay, in that case, my answer, it would be different if it was the other way. But in that case, my answer would be that you need a premarital agreement to protect what you want to give your children.
Yeah, because my understanding is that insurance policies, even if they were purchased years before, they still become the beneficiary of the spouse.
The spouse can try to get their spousal share, and they look at everything to be able to do that. So your safe, okay. Your safest bet would be to get a premarital agreement, a simple premarital agreement, which basically says what's mine is mine and yours is yours, and I can do what I want to with mine, and you can do what you want to with yours, and the rights are waived going both ways. It doesn't have to be both ways. He could just waive his rights to your estate. You don't necessarily have to waive your rights to his estate, but, you know, if the agreement can be drawn to benefit you, and since I'm talking to you, and if you were my client, that's what I would suggest you do.
Yeah, he doesn't have any children, so I would imagine that, you know, anything that he does have will basically be obtaining during the course of the marriage anyway, so I don't think he'll have an issue with that.
Now, if he had substantially more assets than you, I would probably tell you, well, it depends on the age of the parties and the health of the parties. There are a lot of factors. Sometimes I say, well, don't do a premarital agreement or
right.
Hesitate,
yeah.
Don't do one. But it really just depends.
Yeah, I believe that I have more as far as that's concerned. And he doesn't have any insurance policies or anything of that, into that effect. So, all right, what does a premarital agreement cost?
What you can do is you could call our office and ask to speak to Catherine. She's a family law attorney, and you can speak briefly about her. If it's a simple one, it wouldn't be that much, I don't think.
Okay, and then I have a trust in such in my where my children are beneficiaries. So that would all need to be dissolved and a new trust written up?
No, but you could amend it. You know, are you going to leave anything to your new spouse?
There'd be a portion of it, of course, the house.
Yeah, so it could be amended to do whatever you want to do with the assets and the trust after you get married. It should be amended.
So it just be amended. It doesn't need to be rewritten.
No, just amended.
Perfect.
Fine.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. Let's go to Mark calling from Citrus County. Hey, Mark.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, and
yeah.
I appreciate the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. What station are you listening to?
107.5, I believe.
All right, that's a classic rock station during the week?
Yeah, I think so.
All
yeah.
Right. Well, very good.
Appearance, Citrus County.
Yes, sir.
I've got a general question. I don't know if it's above your pay grade or not, but we'll see. It's relation to the medicinal marijuana law in Florida and constitutional right to bear arms. And my question is, for a concealed carry permit holder and a medicinal marijuana user, because I understand you have to register for the medicinal marijuana, and you're already enrolled as a concealed carry permit holder, and in order to possess and operate firearms underneath, I believe, federal law, you have to fill out the firearms background check information saying you don't use marijuana and things of that nature. So my question is, in the state of Florida, there's permits or licensure for both of those things, and they seem to me to be in conflict. So can the state cross-reference these lists and use it to deny rights or force the individual to pick or choose which rights that they want to adhere to, or can they do that? And I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
All right, well, no, don't hang up quite yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Let me tell you, I think the state could do that.
Uh-huh.
But whether it be challenged on the federal level, I would doubt, because on the federal level, they have more laws against marijuana than they are the state laws.
Right.
But I think the state could take a step to try to do what you've just suggested, to make them choose one or the other.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I'd probably go all the way to Supreme Court. It'd be a very interesting case, I think.
Yeah, because because the argument that's always I'm not either of those things. I do, you know, possess firearms, including handguns, but I'm not a concealed carry permit holder, and nor am I a medicinal marijuana user, although I did vote for that amendment when it passed. But my question is, and this is what I commonly get, is concealed carry, and this is what the state of Florida, or when you go for that, they say, well, this list cannot be used to keep track of firearms or be used for confiscation. But I guess you and I both know that lists are compiled for reasons. So.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. But I don't, you know, I'm not going to have an exact answer for you, but I think the state could try to do that. And the state seems to be burdening the whole process down with lots of regulations, and it really hasn't kicked off as fast as people thought it would be anyway. And
right.
This would be another great consideration, I think, to consider. And I'm not sure, I haven't really thought about what I think the answer should be, what the correct answer would be. Because you don't want people with weapons, concealed weapons, to be smoking marijuana, even for health purposes, but they have the right. They could easily argue, I could see the argument, where they have the right to do both.
And as a concealed carry person, you're not supposed to carry in places where alcohol is served. Right. So there's already a little precedent there for, I guess you would say, mind altering substances or things of that nature to guard against that. But anyway, interesting. I just thought, right. So they do have a precedent. They could decide to do that in theory.
I think that the state could definitely try to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Appreciate your time.
Maybe get Pam Bondi on the show and see what she thinks about that.
Yeah. I guess it is up to the Attorney General, and that makes that vote all the more interesting when you go to cast it, too. So.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks for calling.
Not a problem. Thank you, sir. Bye.
Let's go to Brian in Bradenton. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Joe. Is this Joe?
Yes.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. My fiance's mother recently passed away a few months back, and there's three siblings. And, you know, she did the will to split up the estate between the three siblings, but made the brother the executor of the will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's in charge of everything. My question is, if she were to pass, now in the will it says if one of them passes, it goes to the other two. They split up the other two siblings. But if my fiance were to pass, she has children. Would her share go to her children, or does that somehow have to be rewritten?
Okay, well, here's the deal. Since your fiance was living at the time of your mother's death,
right,
her share would vest with her and would be controlled by her will or trust.
Okay, so it wouldn't go to the other two siblings, then. It would go to her children, if that's what she wanted.
It would go to her estate, yes, because she was living when mother died, so everything kind of freezes at the time of the death of the person, what's in the will. So if the will says equally among my three siblings, if one of them die, goes to the other two, it's already vested that your fiancé shares, her one-third share is vested, is hers.
Okay.
And if she would die before receiving it, then her share would be controlled by whatever her will or trust would say.
Okay, well, that's great. So that's, she was worried about that, so
yeah.
I guess we're safe with that then.
Yeah, does her will leave it to you or to her family?
To her family.
Yeah. Yeah, that would control.
The way I want it.
So it would go to her family.
Right. Yeah, okay, good. Well, thank you, Joe. Appreciate the help.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thanks, that'll ease your mind. Bye.
Hey, let's go to John in Bradenton. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hey,
how are you?
Good morning.
Fine. Nice talking to you. Question on trusts and, let's say, assets. Let's say a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, I don't want to say it. I can list the beneficiary of the bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Should I put the beneficiary of the bank account and name the trust as beneficiary, or should I rename bank account, you know, the whole account into the name of the trust?
All right, of course, you could do it either way. I think it's better just to rename the account.
Okay.
Here's why. Before it hits the if you just name the trust as a beneficiary on the account,
yep.
Then you have to die before it gets there.
Okay. Okay.
All right, because you've named them a beneficiary. If you rename the account in the name of the trust and you become incapacitated before death,
yeah.
Your successor trustee can get to the assets for your benefit while you're living.
Okay.
So there's no reason to wait until death,
okay,
you know, to have the account get into the trust. Might as well do it now. That'd be the best thing to do.
Okay. And then does that tie in with protection from let's say I get put into a long-term care facility, and to isolate that asset from, say, to qualify for Medicaid?
No, qualifying for Medicaid would be something different that you would do. We have a full-time Medicaid attorney on staff. In fact, he's written several books on all this. We've had thousands of Medicaid cases where we're able to reposition assets once a person learns that they're going to go into the nursing home. So in about a 60-day window, if somebody's on private pay and they're listening to the radio show right now, if somebody's on private pay, we could probably remaneuver, reposition their assets into different categories and probably qualify them for Medicaid and preserve the estate.
Okay.
The power attorneys that we do for clients have some special powers we get them to initial to be for the power attorney to be able to actually do that.
Okay, and I should just wait for when you announce your phone number to get in touch with that Medicaid attorney on your staff?
You can just contact me. I mean, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about it and probably connect you too.
Okay, all right.
All right, and I'll give you my number now. In Pinellas, well, we have an office that's in Sun City Center, and you're calling from Bradenton. So we have an office in Manatee as well. And we have an office in Liquid Ranch. But anyway, the toll-free office number is just 800-226-3529.
Okay, got it. All right, thanks a lot. Thanks for your answers.
All right, my pleasure. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney. That's me, All About Florida Law. If you have a legal question, hey, I'd like to help. All you have to do is call. Also, if you'd like our free estate planning poster sheet, we'd love to mail that to you. It has the three options in estate planning, has the pluses and minuses of the three options and things to look out for. It has a little cost of probate chart, has a little trust diagram chart on one side. The other side has our 20 office locations, phone numbers, local phone numbers and addresses. It has all of the attorneys, has our website, has radio show information. If you'd like that, I'd love to mail it to you. I need it for you to do one of three things to be able to receive this. You can call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. If you want to email me for it, I need your name and address. You can email it to Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. That's Joe. Email me your name and address, Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. If you want to text me for it, hey, here's my cell number, 727-667-3967, 727-667-3967. If you happen to be watching on Facebook and you need information, I'm a Florida attorney. Practicing law in Florida only, licensed in Florida. We do have 20 office locations around Florida. I'd be glad to mail you the estate planning sheet if you live in another state. But however, you need to know that I'm a Florida attorney, licensed only in Florida. Let's go to Phyllis in Bradenton. Hey, Phyllis.
Yes?
Yes, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hi, sir. I was calling, Mr. Pippen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Whether there was anything called grandparents' rights?
Actually, that's a great question, and unfortunately the answer is grandparents don't have very many rights in Florida. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you concerned about the child who may be in any danger in any way?
Not really. He's 4 years old. He's been in my life since he's been 4 years old. Maybe around April, his mom just automatically cut off me seeing him. I called. She wouldn't answer the phone. She won't let me see him. I tried to reach out to her relatives. They won't talk to me. So I don't know whether it's any danger, but sometimes I do kind of wonder, you know, how something might have happened. They just don't want to. I don't know. It's my son's son, and my son is incarcerated. But I asked someone about it. They said, well, you really can't do too much because when he was born, your son was incarcerated, so he didn't sign a birth certificate. No blood test has been done, but the mom said that it is, you know, your grandson. So, and I don't.
Yeah, parents have, grandparents have very limited rights in this particular circumstance. You can't make the mother let you see the child, basically. So your only really approach is if you found some evidence that your child was in jeopardy, the mother was doing drugs, the mother wasn't a good mother, the mother did this, the mother did that. And if you could have some evidence of that, you might be able to petition the court to become the guardian of the child just for the child's safety. But just visitation rights, when there's nothing like that going on, you really have an uphill battle.
Okay. Okay. Do you think I could maybe, like, just call, maybe to do, like, a welfare check, call an officer just to do, like, a welfare check, just to...
I doubt the police would do that unless you have some cause.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All righty.
All right. Sorry. How long will your son be in prison?
He gets out next year.
All right, well, there's hope, something for you to look forward to.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. And let's go to Patrick in Orlando. Hey, Patrick.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, what can we do for you?
Yes, I would like to ask what I'd probably call a hypothetical question. Does a husband have any legal rights to persuade his wife to leave what I would call a secure environment to go somewhere to live?
Upon her death, you mean? Are you talking about if she died first to leave you a secure place?
No, not die. Let me repeat the question again. Does a husband has any legal right to persuade his wife to leave what I would call a secure environment to go to do what might be an insecure environment to live?
Well, you have a right to try to persuade your wife to do anything. If you're worried, so you're concerned your wife might, like, sell, the example would be sell your current residence and move.
No, sir. I'm asking on behalf of somebody else. But
okay, well, it doesn't matter. So you're asking if basically a husband who's worried about leaving their current location and residence can be forced to move with a spouse to one in another community that's not as safe or secure.
That's correct. But it would be the husband persuading the wife.
Yeah. Well, that's not a legal question, though. That's a spousal persuasion question.
Well, that's why I say I'm just answering the question as in case.
I'll say, so the answer to your question would be no. I mean, they have a right to persuade their spouse to do what's right, but they don't have any legal statute to make them do what's right. I mean, as far as that type of question goes.
It's the other way around. All right.
Hey, Patrick, why don't you call me off the air and we can discuss it. Maybe I'll have more time to discuss it with you.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Let's go to DeSalle in St. Petersburg. Good morning. Are you there? I heard a cut offer. Oh, there you go. How do you pronounce your first name?
Giselle.
All right. What can I do for you?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I have an elderly mother who I have power of attorney with, and she has had for most of her life very low income. So we have been saving for quite a while for burial purposes. Actually, she is desired to be cremated, and we are considering going with a crematory that is not associated with a funeral home. Because they have lower prices.
Mm-hmm.
My one concern is what happens between the time you purchase a plan and the time of death, if they go out of business. Do most of these places have to guarantee a money-back type of agreement, or what usually happens?
Are you buying some type of an insurance plan, though?
Is that something that most crematories offer?
They have various plans. Is this part of a national organization?
I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah. I have a person I could refer you to talk about, if you want to call me about this. I mean, that,
okay.
I mean, it's not with my firm. It's just someone I know that's very good with answering this type of question and giving you advice on that and what type of plans there are. So, hey, if you want to call my office, call 586, here in Pinellas County, 586-3306.
Okay. Thank
just go to extension 200 there and probably leave your name and number, and I'll call you back.
Okay. Thank
All right.
You.
All right. All right, let's go to Chris in Tampa.
Uh-oh.
Hey,
but
Chris.
Anyway, I want to...
Yep.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Is this Joe Pippin?
It is.
Wonderful. Calling from beautiful downtown St. Petersburg.
All right. What can we do for you?
Hey, well, quick question. I have a note from two people. It's a small note. It's a $15,000 note. They've never made a payment since last year. So they've never made a payment once. And I had sued them before, and that was, you know, like $5,000 to sue them. With such a small note, I know I cannot go to a small claim because it's up to $5,000. And they have really nothing that I can use as collateral. Any suggestions?
Well, if you sue them and they don't really have anything, you have a judgment, you know, that would be good to collect on at some point. But a judgment doesn't stick on their home or anything, their homestead.
Right. Well,
and if you don't have anything to, yeah, if you don't have anything to collect on, like a car or a bank account, then you have a worthless piece of paper.
You have a worthless.
I would encourage you. Do they have any money at all to make you a small payment per month or something?
No, I even said, you know, give me $125 a month. No,
yeah.
Okay, so I'm just thinking of just taking my losses and calling it a day.
Well, yeah, unless you want to get a judgment in case some money comes into play later on. At least you've got the judgment.
Right. Now, aren't judgments good for like 5 or 7 years, and then you have to refile?
You have to renew them. How much money are we talking about?
This one's only $15,000.
$15,000?
Yeah, the other one was for like, you know, 100 and something thousand, and that they paid. This one, no. So $15,000.
You know, a lot of times...
Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, you can pursue up to $5,000 of that in small claims court.
Oh,
and a lot of,
I see.
And then you can do that yourself. And then if you go down to small claim court and get the forms and then send them a certified letter, this is what you're about to do, sometimes that shakes a little money loose.
And
that they might have money you don't that you don't know about.
Okay, so if I go to small claims for $5,000, I just forget about the other 10? Is that how that works?
Well, no, not if you do it properly, you could probably still have an open door for the other 10.
Fabulous.
But, you know, if you go down and get the forms and fill them out and then send them certified to them just to let them know you're serious about collecting this money.
Correct.
Sometimes that'll get their attention.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Have an amazing day.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Let's go to George in Jacksonville.
Hello.
Hey, George.
Hey.
What can we do for you, sir? Yeah.
Oh. This
is Joe Pippin. You're on the air.
Yes. I have a question about a concealed weapons license.
Okay.
And I tried to get a concealed weapons license, but I was unable to have a 20-year-old felony conviction in another state. Is there mm-hmm. anything I can do about that?
I don't think so under the current law.
So any felony conviction, no matter how old it is,
Do you you might be able to get? Do you have multiple crimes on your record, or just this one time crime?
A couple of misdemeanors and then this one felony.
Yeah, if you had only one incident, you might be able to get the felony expunged based on what it was. But if you have multiple things going on, you're not going to be able to get expunged, and I think you're stuck.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, I can't help further. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Let's go to Colleen. Hey, Colleen.
Yes.
Okay. Where are you calling from? Yeah, where are you calling from?
Palm Harbor.
Palm Harbor. So what can I do for you?
This is about my mother passing away, and I'm not sure if I'm a beneficiary in the trust. My brother is the executor, and the house that she had, it's just sitting there. It's not being sold, and no one's living in it, and the biggest beef of all was the siblings wanted to live in the house. They wanted to be there. Now nobody's in that house, and I want it sold. So to prevent other issues and more expenses. So
did your mother have a will, do you know?
Yes, she had a trust.
She had a trust, okay. And do you have a copy of the trust? Do you have
a copy of the trust? I don't have a copy of it.
Well, listen, you can have an attorney. If you've done everything you can do and you don't have a good result, you can have an attorney write a letter to the personal representative / trustee of the estate and demanding a copy. First of all, a will has to be filed within 10 days if a person dies in Florida and someone else has possession of the will. So you can put pressure on the personal representative to file the will.
And then
You need to cut your radio off in the background there.
Oh, okay.
And then you can have, if you still don't have a good result after the will is filed, you can have an attorney write a demand letter for a copy of the will and trust. And you would be entitled to receive that if you are a named beneficiary in the document.
So you have to get an attorney to help you.
Well, if you don't have a good result in trying to do anything yourself or get a copy or get the will filed, if you've done everything you can without a good result, then hire an attorney to help you.
Okay, and if you're not named as a beneficiary in there,
then you're not really entitled to a copy. Although you could get a copy of the will once it becomes a public record.
Okay, so if I'm not named as I used to be the executor, then she changed it to my brother.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not named as a beneficiary, do I have any other recourse as one of the living children at the time of her death to have access to some of that after the sale of the house?
Well, let me say this. The wills, if you were omitted in the distribution of the trust, let's say,
yes.
The most common reasons to contest either a will or a trust are incompetence when the change or document was made, or undue influence. So one of your siblings took mother to the attorney's office and was sitting there when she made the change that omitted you, which benefited them.
That would be
influence. So the most common challenges to wills and trusts are undue influence or incompetence. So if you can prove either one of those, you have a chance of overturning the change that was made.
So if the attorney that did all the changes, which was the same one that I took her to originally, when she went back to sign everything, and he possibly could have come to the house to take care of that for her. If he says, oh, no, she was fine. She was not incompetent. She knew what she was doing.
Well, the attorney can make the call on competence. So the most common challenge to wills and trust are undue influence, actually. Somebody was with her that benefited from the change.
Yeah, and that's the person that was fighting to not sell the house. And I said to my mother before she died, no, we're going to sell this house. We're going to...
You're not going to get very far fighting with him yourself, so I would suggest you have an attorney fight for you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. So now I have time to give that information one more time. If you want that free estate planning poster sheet, you can call our toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. Extension 200, you can go there this weekend and leave a message, or you can call first of the week and give your name and address. We'll be glad to mail it to you, 1-800-226-3529. We do have offices in Jacksonville, by the way. And also, you can text Ford at 727-667-3967. And also, you can email me your name and address at Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y, P-I-P.com. And again, you have a great, great weekend. So long.